Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com. Website creation is hard. What's hard? But not anymore, thanks to WonderSuite from Bluehost. Answer a few questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically create your website or store. From there, you can customize your design, colors, and content, and we automatically help you get found in search engines like Google and Bing. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins, Bluehost makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Go to Bluehost.com/WonderSuite.
Andy, Barney, Opie, Goober, Floyd the Barber. That's some of the names from The Andy Griffith Show. Drop by Two Chairs No Waiting, The Andy Griffith Show fan podcast, and we'll visit with some of those folks, along with tribute artists and fans, and just all kinds of things related to The Andy Griffith Show. I'm your host, Alan Newsom, and you can find the show, Two Chairs No Waiting, at twochairsnowaiting.com or on iTunes.
Howdy, partners. You're listening to Conversations with Jacob, hosted by my good friend, Jacob Waller. Make sure to check out the podcast where podcasts are available, and check out the video version on YouTube. You can follow us on social media. Facebook is Conversations with Jacob. Twitter is at CWJ Podcast. And you can visit our website, conversationswithjacobpodcast.weebly.com. Hey, you got a show idea? Maybe a guest suggestion? Email us at conversationswithjacob@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Jacob Waller.
And what's going on, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Jacob. We got a good episode lined up for you this week. But before we get to our guests, I want to do a few podcast plugs. It ain't going to take long. Check out Two Chairs No Waiting, which you heard right here at the beginning of the podcast with Adam Newsom, who was on the podcast a few episodes back. Check it out, twochairsnowaiting.com. Also on YouTube and iTunes, like you mentioned on the ad. Check out our website, Conversations with Jacob, podcast.weebly.com. Upcoming guests, past guests, and some events that are taking place in the Martinsville and Henry County area, which I'll go into here in a minute. So check it out. Also, the events happening in the Martinsville and Henry County area. Hester Cruising in Rocky Mountain. Takes place from April 6th to November 2nd. It's like, I think, the first Saturday of every month. Maybe it's the second Saturday. The first one just took place a few days ago on April 6th. This right here airs on April 8th. The next one is May 4th. Also, if you're in the Stuart, Virginia area, check out the Blue Ridge Jeep Fest on April 20th. In Stuart, Virginia, which I'll be at those, by the way. So if you see me, you know, just come by and say hey, or just ignore me, push me off, do whatever. But anyways, joining me this week here on episode number 50 is Mr. David Wilcox. David, welcome.
Thank you, Jacob. It's a pleasure being here.
Absolutely. Now, for people who don't know anything about you, can you give us a little background?
Well, I guess the reason I'm here is back in the mid-80s, I was a bodyguard for Pat Robertson, who founded the Christian Coalition, the Christian Broadcasting Network, Family Channel, and things like that. And I've written a couple of books recently. One of them's entitled Protecting Pat Robertson. It's a kind of a revelatory expose about what it was like dealing with Pat's personality 24/7 for a number of years. And then related to that is a very revelatory expose. It's a book about the former director of the Christian Coalition, Ralph Reed. It's entitled The Trial of the Devil Incarnate, Ralph Reed, God's Flim Flam Man. And it's a very scandalous book because he's a very duplicitous man. He plays both sides of the field. So that's my alleged claim to fame, and that's I think why we're here.
All right, now for people that's listening, and what was Pat Robertson like off camera?
You know, that's probably one of the most popular questions. I've taken a lot of heat for writing this book. I worked at CBN for a number of years, and a lot of people who work there, I mean, I know dozens and dozens of people that worked at CBN for decades who their only exposure to Pat was what they saw for the hour of TV every morning on the 700 Club. They weren't around him when he was running the day-to-day operation, when he was making plans to do this and that. And the two personalities were quite different. Pat was a very charming man, brilliant man. And what I relate in the book, the book's actually a revelatory transitional book. We talk about some of the funny, quirky, weird things that Pat asked me to do as his head of security and his bodyguard, some of the events we went to, some of the challenges we had. And then comes a time in his life, which was around 1986, and he decided he was going to run for president of the United States. And the book covers that transition and how Pat lost his vision and lost his emphasis on helping people through the ministry and decided to go the way of politics. And we all know that politics is a very dirty business. Yeah. A lot of rascals and rapscallions involved in politics, especially today. And it was not very much different back in the 80s. So I tell the stories that need to be told. A lot of people have criticized me. They call me a Judas. They call me a betrayer. They say I've lost my faith, and nothing could be further from the truth. If anything, I've recognized that I have a great faith in God. I don't need a pastor or have to go sit in a church for 2 hours to talk to God. I can talk to God while I'm sitting here talking to you. I don't need a Pat Robertson and the Christian Broadcasting Network to do the translation for me. So that's basically what it was. Pat was a very complicated man. He liked to get involved in a lot of different ventures. And the one advantage that he had was that he was the king of CBN. Very little accountability. He could say he had probably at least a dozen or more vice presidents that were like his little toadies, and he would speak something into existence, very much like God creating the universe. He would speak it and the vice presidents would make it happen. And if he wanted to, you know, set up a little business to generate funds for the ministry, nobody ever challenged him. The only person that ever challenged Pat Robertson was his wife, Dee Dee. And she was a force to be reckoned with. She always told him the truth, could humble him very quickly. But one of Pat's Achilles heels was everybody at CBN was afraid to tell him the truth. They always told Pat what they thought he wanted to hear, because Pat would fire people in a heartbeat. If you crossed Pat Robertson, chances are you were putting your job on the line. And I could get away with it because I carried a gun. I guess you figured I could shoot him, you know, if I had to. But Pat was born kind of a blue blood in Virginia. A lot of people don't know that he was directly related to two former presidents, William Henry Harrison and Benjamin Harrison. Were both direct relatives. And I believe that his mother was a direct relation to Winston Churchill. So, and then Pat's dad was a lifelong senator from Virginia. So Pat kind of grew up as a blue blood in Virginia, and an aristocrat of sorts. And he had a religious conversion and decided he was going to go into ministry. And he formed CBN with a $3 investment, three $1 bills. He went into the bank and set up his bank account and immediately got overdrawn by $4 because they charged him $7 for the checks. So he was in the hole, but he built it up into quite a ministry. And I was a real believer of following Pat Robertson. When I came there in 85, to go to graduate school. It's actually how I got hired. I was freshly married, and my wife and I decided we were going to come to what now is Regent University and get our master's degrees. And I was looking for a job. So I turned in my resume, and I was a retired police officer at that time from Southern California. And they said, wow, you've got police experience. Pat Robertson's thinking of running for president. Would you? He's looking for bodyguards to keep him alive. My two questions were, what does it pay and when do I start? And that was the beginning of our relationship. So, but I saw both sides of Pat Robertson, a very, very complex man. And I mean, I don't want to beat the issue to death, but always starting new ventures, politics was really his Achilles heel. He really lost the vision. In fact, as I tell in my book, he actually violated the law in several different ways. On one occasion, we were sitting in the car, and he was in the back seat of the company vehicle we drive him around in. And he had two gentlemen, one on either side. One was his campaign manager, a guy named Mark Nuttall. And the other guy was Rob Hartley, who was in charge of, he was kind of the CBN money man, vice president of development, very sweet man. And Jacob, you're probably too young to remember the old time movies where the film hero was in a crisis and he had a little angel and a little devil on his shoulders, right, and they were whispering to him back and forth. You know, that's exactly what the conversation was like. He had an angel and a devil on either side. And the devil was saying, Pat, we've got to get access to the 3 million names on the CBN donor list because there's a lot of money and we need it for your political campaign. And then the angel would say, Pat, you can't do that. It's against the law. This is a tax-exempt ministry. You can't give them this valuable asset to a political campaign. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I was sitting there and I thought, we are really at a crossroads. And then finally this moment of silence came and Pat turned to the money man and he said, give them the list. And we were dead. The result of that one decision, which not only violated federal election campaign laws, but it violated our IRS status and jeopardized our tax exempt status for CBN, which is the lifeblood of any ministry. The result of it was that donations dropped off to CBN by about, I think, over 50%, and about 630 people lost their jobs because of that one decision based on Pat's ego. He wanted to be president. So complex guy, you know, and I was there watching him make all these decisions and doing what I was told, but a lot of people think I'm Satan himself for writing this book, but I'm a truth seeker. I believe in telling the truth, and that's what I did.
Now, which I've seen an interview that you did on YouTube, and you talked about how Pat Robertson had wanted you to go and roughen up somebody.
Yeah, Pat was kind of a cowboy at heart. I don't know if people are aware of it. They used to see him on TV and kind of hunched over in a chair talking to the camera. Pat was 6 feet, 3.5 inches tall in his heyday. He was a former U.S. Marine. He was a former Golden Gloves boxer in the Marine Corps. He had hands about the size of your average meatloaf. I mean, he was a big dude, and he didn't suffer fools. So anyway, we had Regent University on the campus here at CBN, and for some reason, Pat got word that one of the law students over at student housing was abusing his wife. And I was standing there talking with Pat, and he grabs me real quick, and he says, David, he says, I need you to take a couple of your goons from security and go over to student housing and find this dude and take him out back behind the building and rough him up a little bit. Tell him to quit beating on his wife. And I looked at Pat, and I said, you do realize you just asked me to commit a felony. I said, are you going to post my bail when they come to arrest me for slapping this guy around? And he said, oh, no, I won't get that far. I said, no. I said, Pat, I'll go talk to the guy, but I'm sure as hell not going to beat him up. And he would do things like that. And I'll tell you one other similar kind of story. CBN is a big parcel of land down here in Virginia Beach. And when they were buying the land, there were a couple of local homeowners that lived in really tiny little houses, and they wouldn't sell their property to CBN. And they had a couple of them raised pigs for a living. And they would build these little makeshift hog pens out of pallets. And when it rained, sometimes these pallets would fall down, the pigs would get loose, and they'd wander around CBN's property. Pat didn't like that because Pat had a bunch of really expensive thoroughbred horses. He kept a stable right by his house on the CBM. He would go out there and ride these horses around. And he was afraid that these hogs were going to get loose and tear up the lawn and maybe attack his horses and everything. So one day, as he was coming in to do the TV show, he grabs me. He says, look, he says, we have told those people that raised those pigs over there to not let them loose on the property. And one of them got loose last night and came over and rooted through Dee Dee's garden. And she's really mad. So he said, this is a standing order. He says, if there's another hog gets loose on this property, I want you to shoot it. Okay. Well, fast forward about another 3 weeks and I'm at home and I get a phone call from our security dispatcher. And he says, David, he says, there's a hog loose on the property. Okay, I'm coming over. So I told my wife, I said, honey, I got to go kill a pig at the CBN. I'll be back in a little bit. And drove over and I came around what's called the Ring Road. It kind of circles one of the main buildings. And I look over in the tree line and I got three or four security officers standing out there in the darkness. And I could see something big and gray moving around. And this thing, Jacob, this thing was a huge boar. This thing was about as long as average desk, and it had these fangs about 4 inches long jutting out of its jaw, and it was just rooting around. I thought, well, and it was also a telethon time at CBN, a lot of people getting into their cars and stuff, and this thing had been running through the parking lot, and so it was a hazard. So I followed orders and I shot the pig. And I was a pretty good marksman. I hit it twice in the head. I thought, I'll hit it in the head, and it'll take care of the problem. I hit it. I could see the two dimples where the bullets went in. The hog fell down. About 30 seconds later, it got back on its feet. And it was not happy. So I put two more rounds in its head. Went down again. Got back up again. And I thought, this is the hog from hell. This thing's after me. So I thought, I'm going to put two behind its leg in the lungs. And if it lives after that, it's God's will. And I'm going to let it go on with life. Two more shots took care of it. We took care of the hog. It took about six security guards to drag this thing out and get it out. And we put it in a trash dumpster that night. The next morning, Pat comes in. Oh, I forgot one part. During the episode, it was right outside Pat's house. So he calls security. He goes, somebody's shooting a gun outside my house. And they said, no, it's just David killing a pig. He says, good. And he hung up. Next morning, he's coming in for the 700 Club. And he pulls me aside again. He goes, I heard you killed a pig last night. I said, yeah, Pat, it was a big hog. He goes, how big was it? And I told him, he says, oh, that's good. He said, what'd you do with it? I said, well, we put it in the trash dumpster out behind the other building. So I wouldn't want to be the trash guys when they come to pick it up. So, I mean, this is the kind of mentality he had. He just wanted the problem solved, took the shortest distance between the problem and the solution. And a lot of times I got the orders to go take care of it. And I did what I was told.
Now, did he have an anger issue?
Jacob is a duck's butt watertight. Yeah. Pat Robertson had a horrific temper. Pat wanted things done quickly, perfectly, and took very few excuses ever. I think one of his go-to sayings was when he saw something that wasn't to his liking, he would look at you and scream, "What am I paying you for?" Mm. You know, well, Jacob, in the security business, you don't always control all the variables. You know, we at the height of Pat's presidential run, we were out on the road doing maybe a dozen or more events a day in various cities that we really had never been in before, or not a lot. So we were kind of at the mercy of whoever the organizers of the events were. Well, sometimes, you know, things would just screw up. You know, something wasn't where it was supposed to be, or a door was locked we were supposed to go through, or whatever. And man, I tell you, it was something to get your butt chewed. And then on the rare occasion that everything would go fluidly, very well, perfectly, after 10, 12, 14 events, we'd come into the hotel, take him to his room at the end of the night, and the best, Jacob, we would ever get was, "That went well." Mm. And he would walk in and close the door. But God help you if you drop the ball on something, because you'd get, "What am I paying you for?" And you're like, I'm doing the best I can, you know? So it's a very inexact science being a protection officer for somebody like Pat.
So did the people that worked for him for the 700 Club, did they have to go through the same thing?
Yeah, and Jacob, I got to tell you, I just want to qualify this. I loved the people at CBN. I mean, just fantastic people. They did amazing jobs. And some of the crew for the 700 Club, I mean, they could have stood toe-to-toe with any network, TV network on the planet. Just amazing people. But Pat was always cognizant of the fact that he was on live TV from 10 to 11 o'clock Monday through Friday going into people's living rooms. And so you would see the Pat persona, but occasionally what would happen is they would go to a 5-minute videotape segment where the camera wasn't on Pat. They were showing the video story. And Pat would see something he didn't like, and he would call over one of the floor producers and just ream him. I mean, just let him have it. And we'd be standing there just off camera, just going, "My God, this is merciless." You know, and it was something that wasn't even really their fault. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if people, I'm sure there's somebody out there that's probably got video clips, because what would happen, Jacob, is as they were getting ready to come back live to the studio, one of the producers would be counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then pointing to Pat to let him know he was back on live. Well, he was still in mid rear end chewing mode, still leaning over going, "Ah, bah, bah, bah," you know, and he didn't see the cue. And he was still yelling at somebody, and then he'd come back and realize he was on camera. And he'd go, "Well, welcome back to the 700 Club, ladies and gentlemen." You know, and just it's out there somewhere in TV land. But it happened repeatedly. He just was in the middle of just reaming somebody out. I was with him one day in the studio after the 700 Club. He was recording a promotional video for Regent University. And they had a set up, and Pat was supposed to make a notation on a dry mark board, take a few steps, turn to the camera, make a couple of comments, and that was going to be it. And it was a promo piece for something at Regent University. He did that 20 different times, and every time he screwed it up. And he'd get mad, and he'd have to go back and start over. And he kept saying, "Who wrote this? Who wrote this junk? This is junk." Well, it wasn't junk. He just was stumbling over. He was making the mistakes. And after about the 20th time, he stepped down off the stage, went over to a house phone, called over to Regent University, got a hold of somebody, because I could only hear one part of the conversation, and he was asking, "Who wrote this junk? I'm over here doing this promo. Who wrote this junk?" And apparently they told him who, and he says, "I want him fired now."
Wow. Wow.
And they were fired. It wasn't their fault. But Pat just, he'd never admit that he'd made an error. In fact, I'll tell you one more quick little story about how he never apologized. We were in Jacksonville, Florida, and we were doing three night events. We were staying at a hotel there. We were to go over to what we called a grin and grip, which was a meeting with a bunch of high rollers regarding his presidential campaign. They were, you know, he'd grin and grip their hands and ask them for money to support his campaign. So it was a grin and grip session. Then we were going to come down, drive over to this convention center. He was going to do a 1 hour radio interview in a little mobile studio there, and then go inside and speak in front of all these people. So we came out of the hotel, and Pat, God bless him, he wrote all of his own speeches, or most of his own speeches, and he'd write them on yellow legal pads real big, and he was a lefty, so he wrote screwy little letters and stuff. Anyway, so he comes out of the hotel, and he's got a notebook with him. It's a blue notebook, and it was his speech. And we get in the car, and I drive him over to the high rise where the grin and grip was going to be, and he says, David, I'm going to leave my speech in the car. I said, that's fine. I always lock it. So he throws the notebook on the back seat. And we went upstairs to this meeting room, and he did his grin and grip and shook hands and smiled a lot. And I said, Pat, it's time to go. We need to get to your other event. So we went downstairs. We got in the car. The notebook was right where he left it. We drove about 5 minutes over to the convention center, got to the radio venue. We were getting out of the car, and I turned my back to walk over to the radio thing, and Pat started screaming like he was a scalded dog. Where's my speech? You lost my speech! He screamed so loud, I thought maybe he was being attacked. And I turned around. I said, what are you talking about? You got the speech in your hand. This isn't it! You lost my speech! I said, Pat, that's the same notebook you brought out of the hotel. Don't tell me that. You lost my speech. Well, I'd been with him long enough to know that he probably made a mistake. So I said, okay, I'm going to get you into your radio interview. I'll lock the doors. I'm going to go back to the hotel. I said, I'm going to find. Well, where are you going to look? I said, I'm going to retrace your steps. I'll find it. I didn't know where I was going to find it or not, Jacob. I just wanted to get away from him for a minute, get my butt chewed. I drove back to the hotel. I slid in. The valet came out, some nice young kid. I says, you touch my car, I'll kill you. I'll be back in 2 minutes. I went upstairs. I opened the suite. I went to Pat's bedroom, and there's another identical looking notebook. Open it up. Sure enough, there's his speech laying on the bed. Grabbed it. Thank you, Jesus. I went down, got in the car, drove back to the venue, and was waiting for him when he came out of the radio interview. I go, here's your speech. Now, any rational man, let me emphasize that, any rational man would have realized that he had made a mistake, would have thanked me for going to the effort of getting his speech and apologizing. Not Pat Robertson. Wow. His response was, well, it was an easy mistake. And he turned around and walked away.
Wow.
And I thought, I wonder if anybody would be mad at me if I just shot him right in the rear end. Because I just was so livid. I was like, my God. I mean, can't you just humble yourself for a moment and just apologize for the fact that you screamed at me, you threatened me, I got your speech for you. Couldn't you just say, David, thank you, brother. Let's go do my speech. But it just never happened.
Did he think that he was going to win the president election?
He may have, but the people around him didn't. It was amazing, Jacob, because, you know, when you're in executive protection, you're really close to your protectee. Pat was very sensitive. He didn't want to look like he had protection, but God help you if some nut got to him, because he'd say, you need to be closer to me. Well, you just told me to stand over there 2 minutes ago. What do you want? You know, what's the perfect distance? his political people, and there were a few of them that were really squared away. Some of them I wouldn't give you a warm bucket of spit for. They were full of lies. They would lie to Pat. They would tell him they were going to have 10,000 people showing up at one of his speeches and they maybe get 1,500, you know. I used to tell people that was like Pat was the master chef, but they were giving him the recipe for a chocolate cake, but they were giving him the ingredients for a cherry pie. It was never going to turn out good. They would lie. They would mislead him. They were just interested. I think the people that were really around him a lot were recognizing the fact that a couple of things were not going to happen. He wasn't going to get the nomination because too many people were afraid of the separation of church and state. They thought Pat Robertson was, if he got into the White House, was going to mandate that everybody became a born again Christian in the United States. And that wasn't the fact. The other thing is Americans for Robertson, which was his political action committee, they were broke. They were broke. I got a call one day from a guy that I was sitting in my office. This guy called and he introduced himself, real nice guy. He ran a printing shop. I think it was, I'm not actually sure. I think it was in Oklahoma somewhere. Anyway, he was upset. He Americans for Robertson owed him, I think, $130,000 for printing that they had purchased from him. He had provided the services and they hadn't paid him for a long time. He had put his house up as collateral for his business. He couldn't pay his bills because Americans for Robertson hadn't paid him. Because he couldn't pay his bills, he couldn't get new supplies to continue taking in work. And he was getting ready to lose his house to foreclosure and his business was going to shut down. And his wife had told him she's leaving him because she didn't want to be married to him. He's lost everything. So he told me, he says, I understand Pat's going to be at a rally this week here in town, and I'm going to show up at it, and I'm going to cause a real big stink to get somebody's attention that I need to get my $130,000. So in the security business, you don't like people coming in and making big stinks. So I went to Pat's administrative assistant, Barbara Johnson, who was a saint, Jacob. I want that made known very clear. That woman was fabulous. She listened to what I had to say. She put me in her car. We rode over to Pat's house. She went inside. Barbara Johnson was about 5 foot nothing up against Pat Robertson, and she could take him down in a heartbeat. And she convinced him, and God bless Pat, he intervened, and they FedExed the guy a check the next day. But the tea leaves were, Jacob, he didn't stand a snowball's chance. And then when Super Tuesday primaries came around, and Pat, didn't make a good showing, it was very evident that he was not going to get the nomination. He came back to CBN and found out that 600 plus people, he actually contributed to that. He came around. Things were so tight money-wise. Pat was forced to take a yellow legal pad, walk around the complex, stop employees, tell them, what is your name? What department do you work for? What do you do? And who do you report to? And he'd make notes. That night he'd go home and it was like the angel of death. He would say, he would just scratch through names. He would send those over the next day through my best friend, who was my boss at the time, Jim Small. And Jim had the unholy duty to get that material to Barbara Johnson. She'd type up the list. Jim would take the back the list the next morning, walk around to the various departments to the vice presidents and say, Pat wants these people laid off immediately. There was no money. Wow. There was no money to pay him, all because of politics. That one fork in the road where Pat decided, I'm going to put ministry on the back burner and I'm going to go for the presidency. And that's what happened when he got back. So I hope that answers your question, but that's the God's honest truth about what happened.
Now, was it all about money to Pat with the CBN network? Was it all about money instead of helping others, or how was that?
No. When he first started off, that's why I mentioned that the book's transitional. When I got there in 85, Pat was focused on ministry. And I gave, at one point, I was giving Jacob $2,500 a year through the 700 Club. I believed in it. I wasn't making a fortune. When you work for a ministry, you don't make a fortune. I was a member of the 2,500 Club. He's got the 700 Club, which is the base level, and the 1,000 Club, and the 2,500 Club, and higher than that. I really believed in what Pat was doing. He had groups. We had an educational products group that was working on literacy programs to teach, you know, to conquer illiteracy in some of the poorer areas of the country. He had Operation Blessing. They had tractor trailers loaded. If there was a hurricane or a flood or something down in the South and people were devastated, he would drive these trucks, you know, get these trucks down there before any of the government agencies, handing out food, handing out water, doing, I mean, some great things. And then politics came and the shift took place. And you know, as I've related to you, it went to hell in a handbasket. And then when Pat got back, here's the saddest part, Jacob, and I cover most of these stories in the back part of the Robertson book. Pat had this epiphany. He realized, gosh, I took off for a short period of time and the ministry dried up. The funds dried up because I was gone. What the hell's going to happen when I die? I spent 30, 40 years building my ministry. And then all of a sudden, you know, once God calls me home, what's going to happen to it? I'd like CBN to continue my legacy. So Jacob, what he did is he started looking for get rich quick schemes. Now, let me ask you a question.
All right.
If what would you think if a godly man who ran an international ministry serving the Lord, what would you say if a guy came to you and said, Jacob, I've got an opportunity to harvest diamonds and gold in Africa, but I've got to do it through two despicable, murderous dictators that have killed thousands of their own people and are exploiting their country. Treasuries. Would you think that's a good idea for that minister to do that?
I don't.
Aren't we known by the? No. Yeah, aren't we known by the company we keep?
Yeah.
Well, people got to get the book and read it. Pat Robertson. We went over to Zaire, and Pat met with a brutal dictator, and his name is a mouthful. It's Mobutu Sese Seko. He was the dictator leader of Zaire, and he. This guy was just a heinous individual. He murdered tens of thousands of his own people. He was looting their country treasury, but he had a public relations problem, and he wanted to buddy up with Pat Robertson because Pat was a man of good standing in God's eyes. And I guess Mobutu figured if I hang out with Pat Robertson, people think I'm a great guy too. So we went over to Zaire, and Pat met with Mobutu, and Pat wrote out a contract. And while we were there, we were walking around the countryside. Pat's original contract was to handle all the copper mining in Zaire. He was going to start a copper mine over there and build some money for CBM. And then he noticed we'd go out in the countryside and there were all these diamonds laying around, all these little huts that people were living in. And we started, what are all these rocks? Oh, people say, oh, it's just diamonds. There's diamonds laying all over the place in Zaire. Those are industrial grade, but there's diamonds all over the place, and there's gold in Zaire. Light bulb came on. Pat Robertson sets up a deal with Mobutu to set up a diamond mining operation. He spent millions and millions of dollars of CBN money pursuing the diamond mining. Came up with zero, well, maybe a small diamond or two. Did the same thing in Liberia with a guy named Taylor, who was tried by the international courts for crimes against humanity. And Pat was a business partner with him. That's like Billy Graham going and doing a business deal with Osama bin Laden. It just didn't make any sense. But he thought, well, I'll get this diamond mining thing going, or I'll get this gold mine operation going. Or he did a multi-level marketing thing that collapsed like a black hole. He tried to corner the oil market in Long Beach, California. That didn't pump one single drop of petroleum. I used to say that Pat's motto was ready, fire, aim. He always went off half-cocked on these things, and it cost the ministry millions of dollars. And God never honored it, Jacob, because he gave up his true calling. He gave up his true love. He gave up ministry. And God looked down on him and said, I'm not going to honor that stuff. And I used to tell Pat every once in a while, I said, Pat, you dance with the one that brought you to the dance. You didn't get to where you are chasing gold mines and going into politics. You got here by ministry, and that's where you need to focus. And he just looked at me and like shake his head, like I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. But I think I did.
Now, do you think Pat Robinson kind of changed up a bit towards the end, or do you think he was the same person still?
I think, you know, I left the job, Jacob, after a while, and I just couldn't handle it anymore. In fact, my predecessor, Jim Small, he did the same thing. He just saw what was going on, and it was just, what is the point? This isn't my calling anymore. Jim and I got Pat through some pretty hectic times with politics and all that stuff, and he was getting a little long in the tooth, slowing down a little bit. I think Pat, again, had an epiphany that he realized his mortality. He could see the light at the end of the tunnel for his life. He was slowing down physically. I really kind of felt sorry for him because I think, as we all do, we kind of hit the apex of our life and our career, and we think, gosh, we're going to be doing this for the rest of our lives. We're immortal. We don't think about death, you know, but death's going to nail us all. And I think he was kind of sad near the end. He built up a wonderful, wonderful institution. Regent University is a stellar place. I'd encourage people to go there if they want to get their education, get their master's degree, get a doctorate. It's a wonderful institution. I don't think personally that the ministry part of CBN is going to thrive like it did during Pat's heyday. I think once they lose their leader, a personality-driven ministry is going to go the way of the dust. Pat's gone. His son Gordon's taken over. Gordon is a brilliant man. He's much like Pat, but he doesn't quite have the same charisma that Pat had. And I think his audience has changed. We used to talk about the little gray-haired old ladies sending in their $20 a month to the 700 Club. Well, now people are, you know, now the 20-somethings out there, they don't have the same mindset as those gray-haired old ladies about God, religion, whatever. So I wouldn't think that the days for CBN ministry are going to linger. I think the university is going to do very well. Pat changed, and he went from ministry to politics, tried to go back to ministry, and it just, again, not to be overly religious about it, I think God pulled his blessing.
Oh, yeah. Now, where can people get your books?
Well, I've got a couple of boxes in my garage if they want to come by and... No, just kidding. I've got, they're available on Amazon. They're available on barnesandnoble.com. They can go to a couple of websites. One is bigfatcatbooks.com. And just recently started a site called the flimflamchronicles.com. It's a very interesting site. It promotes my second book, the book about Ralph Reed. People who think Ralph Reed was this high holy roller Christian defender of truth and justice for the Christian right, need to get a hold of that book. You know, talking about death, if you read about my untimely death here in the immediate future, it'll probably be because of writing that book about Ralph Reed. It really tells the truth about how duplicitous and unscrupulous that guy is and was. And he still is. He's still at it down in Georgia running a Faith and Freedom Coalition. But anyway, they could see about that book at the site called theflimflamchronicles.com. And would really appreciate it, anybody that wants to get out and spread the word about these, especially the Reed book. We need to start a grassroots effort to share the truth about Ralph Reed and what he did over his career. You know, talk about somebody that lost their direction. The guy, just one of the first things he did when he left the Christian Coalition, he partnered up with a guy named Jack Abramoff, who was sent to prison. Reed, Abramoff, and another guy named Michael Scanlon and a few other people scammed six Indian tribes out of nearly $60 million.
Wow.
Defrauded them. Reed made about $4 million on that deal, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. He's gotten involved in fraud campaigns, conspiracy. I could do an entire different show about Ralph Reed and probably still have more information. But anyway, I hope I haven't talked too much, Jacob, but it's a very passionate subject for me. I believe in sharing the truth. I hope any CBN people that look at this know that I have the highest regard for them, but I also want to tell the truth. And the truth is that Pat Robertson was a very good man, a decent man, but he also took the wrong path and made a lot of bad decisions. And it's all in the book.
Now, at the end of every episode, I like to ask my guest this question. Well, it's not a question. I guess it is. Do you get any closing thoughts for the people that's listening?
Well, I guess probably the thing that comes to mind, Jacob, is the scripture, judge not lest ye be judged. Oh, wow. Don't judge me. Get a copy of the book, read them, and see if it strikes truth to you, because it's all verified, it's all researched, it's all legitimate. I don't mean any malice for people, but when I leave this earth, I want to be known as someone who told the truth. I did a lot of things for Pat Robertson that were a little bit quirky, killing a hog, you know, et cetera. I just hope that people will get the books, read them with an open mind, realize that I'm telling the truth about things. I wish God, everyone the best as far as their relationship with God. And that, I guess, would be my closing comment for you, Jacob. It's please don't judge me. I tell the truth.
Absolutely. Oh, and David, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast to talk about protecting Pat Robertson. I enjoyed it, and I'm sure the people that will listen to this, which I think that they will enjoy it as well.
Well, Jacob, it's been a real pleasure, and God bless you, and good luck with your future ventures.
All right. Well, thank you. And that wraps it up this week for Conversations with Jacob. Tune in next Monday for another episode. Until then, and God bless, and we'll catch you next time.